So this is class 4 of opening your heart. So we will begin by chanting the Metta Sutta, which is on page 59 of the chant book. And a link has been placed in the Zoom chat. Metta Sutra. This is what should be done by one who is skilled in goodness and knows the path of peace. Let them be able and upright, straightforward and gentle in speech, humble and not conceited, contented and easily satisfied, unburdened with duties, and frugal in their ways, peaceful and calm and wise and skillful, not proud and demanding in nature. Let them not do the slightest thing that the wise would later reprove, wishing in gladness and in safety. May all beings be at ease, whatever living beings there may be, whether they are weak or strong, omitting none, the great or the mighty, medium, short or small, the seen and the unseen, those living near and far away, those born and to be born, may all beings be at ease. Let none deceive another or despise any being in any state. Let none through anger or ill will wish harm upon another, even as a mother protects with her life her child, her only child, so with a boundless heart should one cherish all living beings, radiating kindness over the entire world, spreading upwards to the skies and downwards to the depths, outwards and unbounded, freed from hatred and ill will, whether standing or walking, seated or lying down, free from drowsiness, one should sustain this recollection. This is said to be the sublime abiding by not holding to fixed views. The pure-hearted one, having clarity of vision, being freed from all sense desires, is not born again into this world. I also wanted to open class with a little prayer. We gather with gratitude for the relative peace and good fortune we are now experiencing. Still, our hearts ache for all those in this world who are suffering, and we often feel powerless to change the injustice and destruction we witness. May the forces of wisdom, compassion, and generosity triumph for the sake of all living beings. Homage to the Buddha, homage to the Dharma, homage to the Sangha. So this is the series Opening Your Heart. And we will be doing this class through February. And then in March, we will be starting our precept classes in preparation for Jukai. And we start study the moral precepts every year. So we are currently working our way through the Brahma Viharas, or the divine abidings. So those are metta, or loving kindness or friendliness, karuna or compassion, mudita or sympathetic joy, and upekkha or equanimity. So we are on sympathetic joy. So we've already done metta and compassion, but they're all very closely related, as you will realize. So we describe metta as goodwill toward all beings, and we try to extend that as far as we can beyond just those we naturally care for and like. And compassion is what arises when we feel goodwill for a being and we see them suffering. And sympathetic joy, which is tonight's topic, is what arises for us when we feel goodwill for a being and we see them, you know, happy. We see them joyful or flourishing, experiencing good fortune. So we study the Brahma Viharas because it's like there's two ways that we can get at liberation. And one, if you will, is kind of working on our understanding of reality. Reality with a capital R, working on it through our Dharma study, through our meditation, to really try to understand more and more in our own personal experience that we are not separate from all beings. We are not separate from all being. This self doesn't have an inherent, enduring, separate essence. All of that then leads to open-heartedness. But that's kind of one approach to it. But another approach to it is actually to work on opening the heart. And in the process, then we actually might get some of these insights about not being separate from all beings. Plus, it's a good thing to do. This is a good thing to try to cultivate goodwill and compassion and sympathetic joy. So sympathetic joy. I was wondering, when I try to picture arouse and the feeling of sympathetic joy, I think of a small child, you know, doing something like for the first time, something that they're really proud of, like they brushed their teeth by themselves for the first time or whatever, you know, they took their first steps across a room or whatever, you know, drew a picture with a crayon and you go, oh, you know, yay. I mean, you're happy with them, for them, you know, it's just a very natural arising. So I was wondering if anybody had any, like, do you have any other examples that you've experienced or that you can think of where this kind of just sympathetic joy just arises very easily and naturally? And do you want to, anybody want to share?
My best friend recently just got accepted into a neuroscience program, and I felt so happy and proud for her. Mm. But it also motivated me to like pursue what I you know, dream of doing, to kind of like, I guess, get on her level. It pushed me as well. But
Can the cloud, were you able to hear that in the cloud? Good. Cool. Yeah. That's a great example.
For me, every time that I'm coming home and my dog is coming in.
When she comes home and the dog is sitting, I mean, I definitely think of
a second of like,
Definitely think about my dog. I mean, one of my dogs just absolutely loves toys. And he's got this little toy. It's like fuzzy on one side and a picture on the other of an otter with a space helmet on, and it says otter space. And he just, like, you know, he's just playing with it. It just, you know. Any other examples popping into people's heads?
Maybe when someone wins and but you don't even know them, like it's like a team or for the Olympics, you know, when somebody does a perfect 10, you know, gymnastics, yeah, like that, you feel so happy for them, but you don't even know them. Like,
yeah. Yeah. And you didn't even necessarily care about the whole situation until you saw them trying, and they're like, yes.
Cool. Every now and then I see someone I know very well, like, forming.
I probably, I mean, yeah.
Hi, everyone. I was saying every now and then I see someone I know performing, and I can see other people watching them and respecting them, and they're just like doing what they're so naturally good at and like thriving in that moment, doing something. Like, I, for example, my supervisor at work today, he's like this really shy, like stereotypical engineer, like doesn't like leading meetings or anything like that. But today we did a job, we've had a meeting on site. And all these, there's like 12 engineers like watching him, really interested in what he had to say. And like, he was like the center of attention and he was thriving. And I can think of a lot of examples like that.
Yeah. Sweet. Thank you. Phil? You're still muted.
I have two grandchildren that I help take care of 4 or 5 days a week. One is 2 and 1 is 7. And so anytime I'm with them, it's like nonstop mudita. So
that's cool.
It is. It is. So yeah, I wanted to, you know, summon some positive images of it before I started talking about the challenges to mudita. So this is from Edward Conze's Buddhist Thought in India, and it's quite an old book, but I just happened to 1973. Now, first of all, originally 62. But he just had a beautiful way of writing about the, he calls it the social emotions, the Brahmaviharas. And he's talking about how compassion is placed before sympathetic joy as being easier to achieve. So general goodwill, then compassion, then sympathetic joy. He says, to the natural person, the suffering of his fellow creatures is not altogether repellent and somehow positively attracts him. The popular newspapers would not devote so much space to calamities if their readers were less avid to read about earthquakes, wars, murders, traffic accidents, atrocities, and so on. Psychologically speaking, compassion is closely allied to cruelty, which can be defined as the pleasure derived from contemplating the suffering of others. The two are the reverse and obverse of the same metal, M-E-D-A-L. Both the compassionate and the cruel are sensitive to the suffering of others and keen on watching it. The compassionate derive pain, the cruel pleasure from what they see. But the division between pleasure and pain is not at all clear and unambiguous. In masochistic pleasure, the two are inextricably interwoven. And in addition, we are endowed with so striking a capacity for self-deception that our true motives can rarely be ascertained with any degree of certainty. So it must really be left to the practice of sympathetic joy to overcome the negative sides of compassion, as in despondency and cruelty. Sympathetic joy sees the prosperous condition of others, is glad about it, and shares their happiness. Logically speaking, one might expect that we would welcome the happiness of our fellow men more than their misery. In fact, nothing is further from our distinctly misanthropic natural inclinations. In the deeper layers of their minds, people harbor a definite aversion to dwelling on the happiness of others. Envy and jealousy are strong, deep-seated, though rarely admitted, counterforces. All the time, we jealously compare our lot with that of others and grudge them the good fortune that eludes us. So maybe it's a little bit of a negative view, but brings up some good points. So I figured we could, as we have done before, kind of brainstorm some, I'm calling it reasons we fail to feel sympathetic joy. So this. Yeah, my little Zoom screen here so I can see a few more people. And I can't see all the Zoom folks, so if you do want to say something, you could just, I don't know, unmute yourself and say it, or use the raised hand feature down under reactions. So reasons we fail to feel sympathetic joy. Envy.
Sadness, depression.
So in the sense that we're just too caught up in our own stuff.
You can't even really feel it for yourself.
Can't even feel our own joy. Leah.
A sense of unfairness that someone got something that you should have gotten.
Yeah. Maybe their joy, like the same event that brings them joy has a different meaning to you. Like they won the prize, I didn't, or like it's a very simple fight, but like that somehow I don't know how else to explain it.
Like their source of their joy is actually a source of kind of some sadness to you,
there's billionaires, so there's homeless, right?
Like, so like you and I are applied for the same job, and you got it, and I didn't.
Mm-hmm.
Oh,
so that can make you feel mixed feelings about,
Focusing on comparison instead of the end. So,
like that. Comparison.
Apathy.
Trauma.
Dislike for the personal.
or worse.
How about self-centeredness?
Othering, and that's feeling someone they are as an other doesn't deserve that particular joy.
Tyler.
Yeah, you kind of touched on this, but then it kind of went a different direction. But I think like the thing that they're joyful about, you find problematic or like troubling. So yeah, like in my province, there's different political beliefs and the things they're all excited about. And when they win, I'm like, oh, that's not good. Like, I can't be joyful for that win or whatever.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, like, I mean, my neighbor might be really happy. He just got a new Hummer. I've got a different view.
That's right. Yeah, exactly.
He didn't, by the way. Did I just pull that up?
But you thought about specific neighbor when you said that.
Tunnel vision, maybe.
Yeah, so there's various reasons, like our own heart is kind of closed. We're kind of focused on our own stuff. And sometimes it has to do with that. The other person, judgment about the source of their joy. So, looking at what is at the root of our judgment or stinginess or closed-heartedness. I was looking at kind of like four kind of made categories of reasons. Actually, for the little meditation that we're going to do, we need writing stuff. Would you get that stuff, Coral? And if you're at home, and I'm kind of assuming y'all have like pens and papers around, but if you don't, you might want to get that. So we'll do that after I do this. So I was figuring that you can summarize, your joy is not my joy, right? Like, so we feel kind of a closed heart, maybe a lack of active goodwill, you know, disinterest, self-absorption, kind of distance. Like, I don't know, your joy has nothing to do with me in a way. So kind of, if we're looking at the opposite, if we are trying to cultivate this and we're trying to open up to the deeper Dharma, is it really saying your joy is my joy? And if we stay with a really limited view of kind of ownership and selfhood, you know, that's kind of not true. I mean, if you go on an amazing vacation, I don't feel relaxed, right? Like I don't get to enjoy your experience, your exact joy in that way. So what is meant? So when my heart is open and I see you joyful, I feel joyful as well. So it really is about the state of our heart at the moment, right? We're paying attention, feeling active goodwill, breaking down a sense of our separation from one another, from all things. Like I said, we do this through many of our practices, but we can do this through the active trying to expand our ability to feel sympathetic joy. Second category was, your joy comes at my expense. Feelings of resentment or insecurity, jealousy, as opposed to envy, right? Not wanting, but like kind of being afraid of losing what we have, a sense of lack, insufficiency. So your joy comes at my expense. I mean, this is rarely true, right? I mean, you had the example of like somebody gets a job, you both apply and they get the job. I mean, but rarely is that really the case. We can often have a sense that there's only so much good stuff in the world, only so much good luck, only so many good partners, only so much like, and so, you know, if you get a break, then somehow I'm not going to, or that kind of comparison. So it's interesting to contemplate the premise that more joy in the world is a good thing. Your joy is shallow or silly. or wrong, but I mean, I guess that that'll fall more into the next category. You don't deserve your joy. So in this one, your joy is kind of shallow or silly or whatever. It's judging someone's relationship to whatever this experience is. So this is actually the section of Kanza which has stuck with me and made me go back to this book many times. He's talking about that. All the time we jealously compare our lot with that of others and grudge them the good fortune which eludes us. The very fact that we are concentrating, or are believed to be concentrating, on spiritual values may militate against feeling sympathy for the happiness of others. For happiness can be of two kinds, worldly or spiritual. To most people, success means material prosperity. When they are elated by having made some money, having got a better job, or a new house, or because their children get on in the world, the spiritually minded are easily tempted to respond to this elation with a mixture of derision and pity. To those trained in the law of the spiritual life, it seems greatly foolish to be happy about things like that. And wisdom seems to prompt the reflection that this kind of prosperity cannot possibly last. It's usually bought at the price of spiritual enslavement and likely to lead to great sufferings in the future. To rejoice, all of that's kind of negative, but I really like this sentence. To rejoice with the children of the world in what they value as successes requires a rare spiritual perfection. It demands a complete and total indifference to material things, because nothing else can deaden the spirit of rivalry. Only then can we ungrudgingly approve of the joy over them, just as a grown-up person rejoices with a baby who has just learned to walk, or with the athletic prowess of a young boy, or with the beautiful sandcastles built by children at the seashore. All that lies quite outside the field in which he competes and in which his self-esteem is at stake. To rejoice with the children of the world in what they value as successes requires a rare spiritual perfection. And that complete and total indifference to material things, I don't think for myself that he's talking about not enjoying things, but not being attached to things. And also, like, when we reject things, like, there's a way that we're just as caught up in them as when we're grasping them. So to just, you know, not be spiritually uptight, constipated. I can think of two examples. I can't remember the exact story, but this was my Dharma grandmother, Roshi Kennett. And she was practicing in a monastery in Japan. It was, you know, hardcore practice. And she was all into that. And then at one point there was time for tea in the abbot's quarters, as I recall. And like, they were just sitting around and enjoying like cakes, and just like chilling and enjoying cakes. And I don't know, she was like implied, or she reacted in some way that this was like, you know, kind of a waste of time or something. And her teacher really was like, this is what we're doing right now. Right now we are enjoying cakes. and my example, some of you will have heard me say this before. I remember hearing Kyogen and Gyokoko stories over and over, and now you get to hear mine. So I was a nice spiritually constipated young monk, and a friend of mine, layperson, he was one of the very first people to have a Prius, like he was on the wait list. He got it, you know, so almost nobody else had him. And, you know, he came into the Dharma house, the Zen Center house. And I was like, oh, it's, you know, I got it. It's outside. And like, I had to go outside and see and sit in the passenger seat and show us this and show us that. And, you know, and I'm trying to fake it, but But inside, I'm just like, what would the Dalai Lama do, right? The Dalai Lama would be just be like, what is this? What does this do? You know, like he would be just like, he would just be excited for, you know, so I felt really like spirit stingy toward my friend. So, but then I also thought like Kanza's talking about this kind of, if you have kind of spiritually minded, then you might judge material pleasures. But then if you're spiritually minded, you're also going to be really competitive about like spiritual joys, right? You can imagine going to a retreat and let's say so-and-so, like Courtney has a really dramatic spiritual awakening and like, you know, like, well, so much for my retreat, you know? And then finally, you don't deserve your joy. This is a hard one, right? And this is really withholding. We can't feel the sympathetic joy because, I mean, it's a little different when we were talking about, like, we think that their source of joy actually causes harm. It's a tricky one. But in this case, maybe let's say the joy, no particular big deal about the source of the joy. It's just the person is just not a very, you know, we don't think is a very good person, whatever. But this is, again, about, like, withholding goodwill as if, like, somehow we can, like, punish them or control their behavior by withholding our goodwill. You know, like, we can control things with our minds. If I don't approve of your actions, if I don't feel any sympathetic joy for you, like, then you'll know somehow. Or if I did just feel compassion and sympathetic joy for you, you just feel like you could just get away with anything, you know? So it's like we withhold, hoping that that's going to make some kind of difference to people's behavior, which it actually only generally affects us, right? And if it does affect the other person, it usually just makes them defensive and angry. So I wrote a little meditation for us. So it'd be a meditation, but with writing it down so you can kind of call things to mind more easily. So you don't necessarily have to write it down if you don't want to, but starting off with writing down can I have one too? Then I'll paste this correctly if I'm doing it too. Write down something, an object, an experience, whatever, that would bring you great joy. Yes. Just something that, you know.
Has to be a material object?
No. It could be an experience. Okay. It could be anything. Could be something a little bit more concrete than peace on earth. But, so now imagine you obtain or experience this source of joy. How do you feel in your body, heart, and mind? Is there a smile on your face? Do you feel tension draining from your face, shoulders, abdomen? Do you feel yourself suffused with energy, interest, curiosity? Really try to imagine and summon into your experience of this moment that sensation of joy, ease, of fun. Now, write down the name of a person or being for whom you find it very easy to feel goodwill. Your go-to subject for meta practice. Now imagine them enjoying whatever it is they typically enjoy. And write down what this is. Spend a moment imagining this being enjoying. Notice your joy on their behalf. Now write down the name of a loved one with whom you have a good relationship. And then write down something you think they would enjoy. Don't think too hard. It doesn't have to be the thing they would enjoy the most in the world. It could be simple or not. Now imagine your loved one enjoying this. The ease and joy on their face. Their enthusiasm, engagement. Notice your joy on their behalf. Now write down the name of a friend or acquaintance, maybe someone you have a more neutral experience with. Maybe even, if you want to make it challenging for yourself, maybe even someone you have a little bit of a problem with. Little bit of a judgment for. Then write down something you would enjoy but do not have. Something you would enjoy but do not have or are not currently experiencing. Maybe a new car, a home remodel, a child who's thriving, retirement, financial security, romantic relationship, a dramatic spiritual awakening. Think of this, so this is something that you would enjoy, do not have at the moment. Ideally, think of something likely to cause envy to arise in you. Now imagine your friend or acquaintance enjoying this thing instead of you. Imagine them, their joy and ease, that their excitement, maybe they're telling you all about this situation, this thing. And recall your own sensations of joy. And try to kind of put yourself in your friend's place and imagine what they're feeling. And you be happy for your friend. Try to dissolve some of the sense of separation between you. Let go of a sense of lack, of judgments of worthiness or unworthiness. And you remove yourself from the equation. And then you open your heart and feel some of the limitless sympathetic joy you were able to summon for your go-to meta subject or for your loved one. So, any reflections? Yeah, go up there.
I picked a hard one. So you said at first find someone. Do you want a commentary on all of this or okay, just but... okay, the difficult part was this last part. I picked someone who is not really even neutral. It was my ex-husband, who's it's a very difficult character, and I picked him. And then something that I really want in my life is a kind, loving partner, which he was not to me. So imagining him now having that was a really, really hard one. And I'm not there yet. I will admit, I'm not there yet. So it's something for me to work on. Yeah, that's a hard one. Yeah, she knows. That's a really hard one.
I mean, I picked this woman that I think is really creepy. And I imagined that she got a book published. And as I was sitting there trying to like, okay, can I feel some of that, just that, you know, like I felt for my mom, the loved one, right? It was part of me that occurred like, why should I? Why are we even doing this?
Yeah.
Like, why is this even necessary, right? It's kind of like, it's almost like about compassion makes more sense in a way, right? Right. You're like, oh, you're suffering. I should do something about your suffering. But sympathetic joy.
It's really true. Because if I think, okay, if he came to me and said he was really hurt or something, that compassion will arise.
Yeah.
Naturally. But if he were experienced the greatest joy, you know, something that I'm trying to, and he treated me really poorly, it's really, really challenging.
Yeah.
And I don't know. I mean, the next question is, how do we get there?
Right? Yeah.
I'm leaving that. My ex-husband is having a good relationship, and I'm actually happier because I find that because he has, I don't know how it's working, but I think that because he has a successful relationship, he's a little bit less of an asshole. Like I really see that. So I'm like, okay, meaning it does make him a little bit better.
Yeah. And maybe that's the, you know, that idea that like more joy in the world is a good thing.
Yeah.
Even though like in certain circumstances we're kind of like, but Leah.
So is it okay to report failure? Come back with it. Because that's kind of where I went with this, because it's like, it seems so easy, mudita, until it isn't. Like I was doing fine. I was imagining feeding turtles. I mean, it was great. They were eating bananas. I mean, That's great. And then as we're progressing, it's like, oh, okay, I'm imagining this woman I work with at the gallery and imagining her enjoying her grandkids. And then it's like, I'm just never going to become a grandmother. And I don't know why I can't let this one go. I just really can't let it go. When somebody gets to have grandkids and I don't, then I just get so like, I don't know. It's like hurts on a different level almost. So I think like you said, it's going to take work. There's this and a couple other things. It's just like, I have a lot of trouble watching other people enjoy. But
and I think this is, you know, this is why we're kind of working at it from both ends, right? We're working at it through our own like karma and healing and all of that, acceptance that can make this a little easier. But on the other hand, this, you know, really the all four Brahma Viharas, you know, are approached the same way, right? So with metta, you know, you start with a subject that is just, you know, you can just real, oh, you can just feel that, you know, come up. And then it's the idea is like, okay, keep that feeling. Now call somebody a little bit more complex to mind, and can you kind of keep that feeling? So for just a split second, I was like, okay, so I've got this woman in mind, and she's, you know, bragging about, you know, having published a book and just thinking like, okay, remember how you felt when you were imagining that, you know, my mom finally got me and my sister to go on a trip with her, right? And like, she would just probably just be like, you know, just like the whole time, just like, oh, I'm so glad that you guys are here, you know? So like, I was able to feel that joy on her behalf. So for just a split second, I was able to just kind of like take that and imagine that in this scenario. So I feel like that's just like a little tiny wedge into my heart, I guess.
I see that. One thing I've noticed with this exercise is it's so easier for me to imagine somebody I like enjoying their grandkids. And then if I move it to somebody more neutral or somebody I don't like, then it's like, well, I suddenly don't like that you're enjoying your grandkids. It's so stupid. But yeah, I mean, get to it slow, I guess.
Yeah. Brian.
It was interesting. The first part was I imagined, you know, I had a beautiful trip. It was one of the things on my bucket list. And I'm sitting on the very front of the boat in Polynesia, French Polynesia, sunset's going down at the very tip of the boat. And I'm so happy and so joyful and so great, feel so content. And my daughter, who is with me, my older daughter, she just said, "You enjoying this, Dad?" She was happy because I was happy. So it's a reverse, not for me, but she was happy that I was happy. So then I went back and I have pictures and I look at this stuff. And I went back and said, well, is this an isolated situation? And then no. The first time my younger daughter was with me, we traveled around the world all the time. And the first time she saw the Eiffel Tower, we're riding on the rapid transit system, the train, coming around the curve. And you could just start to see the Eiffel Tower. And she started to cry. Like she was crying. And I felt, oh, she was so, she said, I don't know what it is. It's there. It's the Eiffel Tower. I've always wanted to see the Eiffel Tower. I always wanted to be there. And I felt so good because she felt good. And then a month or so later, we're driving in Egypt at night, really dark. And the pyramids, the Gaza pyramids are all lit up, and she sees those ones. Wow, you know, it was like these are wow moments. And then I felt so grateful that I could show her the stuff I really enjoyed. And I felt good because she felt good. So I think if I reverse that slightly, I think that when we feel great, other people see it and they feel good too.
Thank you. Charles.
Yeah, I, you know, had similar like reactions and experiences what other people shared. You know, I picked one that was like difficult for me. But what I was kind of thinking of is that I play basketball and, you know, for whatever, I've never done it competitively, but I still like work on like moves and stuff like that. And I get kind of like twist around sometimes working on like footwork type stuff of like, oh, how did that spin? Okay, you had to dribble with that hand and then pick it up with this hand. And it like, if I try and do it all fast and like at game speeds, I won't do it. So I really have to like slow down and do it step by step in order to get the like cognitive pathway in order to eventually do it at game speed. And I, that's kind of how I felt doing this, was that it really helped to kind of slow down and do it step by step. And that way I kind of have that in the back of my mind of like, oh, that's when you feel that bad feeling of like, this person got a good thing and is happy and you feel bad. Like it, you know, it gives me like a pathway of like, oh, here's kind of the better pathway for that. And I found that really helpful. And hopefully, you know, my footwork gets better and I'm able to do these moves better in the future. So
I love that analogy. That's awesome. Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I have to admit that like when I explore my consciousness, yeah. I'm like, oh man, I have a fair amount of work to do on this whole sympathetic joy thing, right? Like, I think I'm pretty good on compassion. Pretty good on like kind of general goodwill. You know, just if you don't think about it too much, you can be like, yeah, I have goodwill toward them, you know. But then when you start to contemplate this, and it gets a little more complicated. Like, I don't know. All right, well, thank you all. We dedicate the merit of this Sangha meeting to all so that they may be able to obtain the truth. All Buddhas throughout space and time, all honored ones, Bodhisattvas, Mahasattvas, wisdom beyond wisdom, Maha Prajna Parama.
Thank you all for coming.
I don't even know what the thing I wrote that made me happy. There's some of that like writing and stuff.
So do you want that thing to be a little black?